This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome to the People Speak radio show. I'm your host, Michael Strasser. The People Speak normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS radio network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. The number is 1-888-429-5471. That's 1-888-429-5471. This is a special show tonight. Our guest is Ryan Dawson. He's the author of Welcome to the USSA, Corruption in the Government and Media, and he also recently wrote The Separation of Business and State. He's also created documentaries such as War by Deception and The Empire Unmasked. His website is risetwosense.com. That's R-Y-S, the number 2, S-E-N-S-E.com. Hello, Ryan. How are you this evening?
I'm good, and when I picked that domain, I never knew I would grow to the point where I was talking on television about politics. I just thought, oh, Rise 2 Cents, whatever. I would have picked something.
I heard about
better,
the website. I'd heard about the website a few years ago in a Ron Paul group, and I had no idea what it was going to evolve into. So,
yeah, I supported Ron Paul, and I still do. And a lot of new people found me from Ron Paul. There are a lot of other people who have been following me since 9/11, and then I picked up more during the Iraq War, of course.
But I mean, you know, I've seen you over the years get more and more blunt on the issue of Zionism since then, I think. And this is something that I see most of the people in the front lines of the so-called truth movement just skipping over. What was your experience in coming to terms with this and, you know, the Israeli lobby and other interest groups involved?
Well, they're so central. I don't know how anybody could avoid it. That's like talking about World War II and not mentioning Germany. The reason we went to war in Iraq and the reason we put sanctions on Iran and the reason we're involved in Syria is all because of Zionist interests. It doesn't benefit America, and it's just impossible to avoid. The very first video I ever made was for Palestine. They're like 72,000 views. This was before YouTube existed. When I put that video on YouTube, I had my account erased. No reason given. It was just, you know, an anti-racist video showing these people are colonizing other people, demolishing their houses, etc. But people are scared to talk about that because there's a stigma that if you oppose Israeli policies that somehow you must be anti-Semitic, which is about as, you know, a serious an accusation as saying if you accuse Obama, it's because you're racist and you hate black people, as if there's no other possible reason you couldn't like his policies. And that's how it is for the Israelis. I mean, the Zionists are absolutely central. They have the largest lobby in the United States. It's not even registered as a foreign agent like every other foreign lobby. So it's ridiculous to avoid it. But I do agree with your assessment that a lot of people in the so-called front line try to dodge it. So to me, they're not really telling that you can't be a part of a truth movement if you're not telling the truth.
No, I mean, it's just giant obfuscation all over the place. I mean, whether you're talking about spin doctor like Alex Jones or far out cuckoos, I'm probably going to offend a lot of people. I think she's been on this show, like Judy Wood, you know, you're just not going to cover this issue.
That she's definitely kookier than Alex Jones, but she's not as damaging as him, because when you go so far out there talking about holograms and space rays and things, most people just ignore that. But Alex is he's a much better propagandist, especially for Zionism. I mean, he won't even tell his audience that Palestine's occupied. He's told them the opposite, in fact. And he's a doomsdayer, just chasing every military drill there is, from black helicopters to FEMA to Jade Helm to Google controlling light bulbs in your house, and he'll bite on anything. He said Ebola was going airborne. He thinks Fukushima is going to kill everybody. Just anything to scare people, and just never really getting into the issues. And the other thing those people do, and the people who parrot Alex Jones, is they put people on vague paths to nowhere. Rather than getting into specifics and giving some names and documents, they just say things, basically saying they did it. And then there's many words for they: the New World Order, the globalists, the Freemasons, the Bavarians, the German death cult, the whatever. He switches terms every few years, but compartmentalized criminal elements, etc. But he never tells you who it is, and he won't.
No, he had Jordan Maxwell on his show, and they went on this long rant about Teutonic Zionism, and there's no such thing. They just made it up.
Yeah, he had the 13th tribe stuff on there. Just Jonestown, I call him Jonestown after Jim Jones in the Kool-Aid. It's Kookville, it's Kookspiracy, and he's almost single-handedly created a massive stigma about 9/11, where even people who reject the government story, which I think is most people actually, I mean, they don't want to be too vocal about it because they don't want to be associated with Alex Jones and all his other kooky stuff. They've essentially created this cult that exclusively talks about nothing other than the physics of 9/11, and not looking at the money, not following any leads at all about who did it. They just talk about Building 7 indefinitely, and they even exaggerate that so that that's not even as plausible because people will look in and debunk that too. So they've really destroyed any kind of sincere movement to investigate 9/11. By exaggerating claims and making up lies, and specifically avoiding the culprits that we know were involved in 9/11.
Well, I mean, I'd like to clarify out there, and there are documentaries floating around the web like Missing Links. I mean, I think it's got quite a few facts, okay, but when you go deeper and deeper
Missing
into it,
Links
it
was borrowed from my book. I used to talk to Mike Delaney. I didn't know he was a racist. He wasn't at the time, actually. And they just, all they did was read a paper by William Pierce from the National Alliance. It was dated because a lot of the things in Missing Links are wrong. They were saying Michael Eisner was head of Disney when he wasn't at the time. They're reading the paper without even updating it. That's how little research was done into Missing Links. It's called Who Rules America. It was written by a white separatist. And it was Jew this and that. It was disgusting. And then they put some B-roll of dancing. The only facts they really got out in there is like, yeah, all that stuff written about the media was true, but it was a little bit on the judges and Philip Zelikow. But that movie was just reiterating other people's work, and no credit was given. And then Dr. Pierce passed away, so that was that.
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to get into with that is because toward the end of it, toward the start of it, they just start with the Israeli and the Zionist connection. Toward the end of it, they try really, really hard to sell you on this anti-Jew position. And I know you don't do that. And I'd like to
Yeah.
clarify that for the audience.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Israel's guilty of a lot of things. I mean, so is Saudi Arabia. But you can't really judge, let's say, Muslims in general by the behavior of, Wahhabi Salafists in Saudi Arabia. And there happens to only be one Jewish state, and it's a terrible one. But in the case with Muslims, people can look at other states and see where they're a lot more sane than Saudi Arabia is. But in the case for Jewish states, there's only one, and it's a bad one. But you can't conflate Judaism or Jewishness with the Israeli state. It's like saying the blaming the CIA's behavior on it being comprised of white people. It has nothing to do with it. Or that North Korea is full of Koreans, so it must, that's why it's the way it is, ignoring South Korea, same race, same language, everything. That's just collectivist nonsense. There is a bit of nepotism, tribal nepotism between racist Jews, but that's an ideology is not a genetic disposition. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Exactly. And I mean, you touch on something there, which I think very few people do. You kind of take this middle position where, there will be kind of some people trying to go and blame all Jews, but then you'll have other people on the other side who kind of try to distance, themselves from mentioning people who do get into the kind of tribalism. And I think that you go the right place here by divorcing the racial issue as the the cause.
Right. You shouldn't avoid people who are racist because there are racist minorities, and you shouldn't be racist either. I mean, it's a stupid ideology, but to ignore it is also stupid. I mean, there are definitely Zionists who are racist Jews. I mean, they believe in that they are the chosen race of God, and they are currently demolishing homes and racially colonizing Palestine, and there is definitely nepotism in business where they exclusively hire each other, etc. You can't ignore that level of racism that exists, but you can't extrapolate that racist Zionist Jews to Jews in general. Just, I mean, the same as any other form of racism. I mean, you can pick a group, and the same thing applies.
But I mean, wow. And it's just a breath of fresh air. I've just never get to speak to somebody who has their head on so straight about this. I mean, spend years kind of pulling your hair out, figuring out where everybody's at. And I've just seen you over the years, as far as 9/11's concerned. And I think that you're a caliber above the rest because it just goes all over the place. And I'd kind of want this to go into 9/11, and this is related because you cover the topic of Zionism in both of your films that I plugged at the beginning here.
Yeah, War by Deception, which is free on YouTube. Few versions of it. There's an hour and 20-minute version, and then there's a 3 hour and 40-minute version, I think, because one talks a lot more about the Iraq War than the other. They both have 9/11 in it, but people have to remember 9/11 led to the Iraq War legally. I mean, there was the UN Resolution 1441, which acted as the pretext to invade Iraq, which stipulated they couldn't have weapons of mass destruction. And it was lies from PNAC and these Zionist think tanks claiming that Mohammed Atta, the lead hijacker of 9/11, on flight 11, had met in Prague with senior Iraqi officials and transferred anthrax to him. And then, of course, there was the anthrax attack, which said "Death to American Israel" and 9/11 written on it. So Iraq had been erroneously associated to 9/11 hijackers, as well as chemical weapons or biological weapons, saying that they had anthrax. So that was the pretext for the war in Iraq. But it turned out there weren't any mobile weapons labs. They didn't have any anthrax. There was no meeting in Prague. They didn't give anthrax to Al Qaeda. In fact, Al Qaeda didn't even have the anthrax. It came from America's own labs. But, then they went out to Ames, Iowa, and destroyed all the Ames Strait of anthrax, which is the anthrax that had been used in the middle of an investigation. So people, you can't just neatly lop off and say, we'll talk about 9/11 or we'll talk about Iraq, because they go together. All three of those events go together. One bleeds into the other, the Afghan War, too. It never would have happened without 9/11. And to me, the far greater crime than the 3,000 dead on 9/11 are the millions killed in those wars. Over a million.
That's something that people often ignore when they say, well, I don't think that the government would kill 3,000 people like that.
Oh, yeah. Our government's killed a lot more than 3,000 people. Our government, it's something else. The American government has never been charged of war crimes, despite using two nuclear bombs, chemical weapons, biological weapons, and murdering civilians at a rate above 80%, and yet no war crimes for the United States. War crimes are just an active arm of Western power. It's only a war crime when their enemy does it.
Anyway, everyone, this is the People Speak radio show. I'm Michael Strasser talking to our guest, Ryan Dawson, creator of The Empire Unmasked. I recommend everybody check this out. I have watched it, but it's been a while since I've gone through it. You had given me the link to this a
That
while back.
film is very thick. It's 4 hours and 54 minutes, and it covers the drug trade, the Afghan War, Syria, ISIS, 9/11 in very strict detail. I went over all these people who were caught, and of course the Iraq War, and it gives you the holistic picture. And I could have cut it up into a series, but I figured, well, that's up to the viewer. They can just pause it and look at the rest later, or they can watch it all in one chunk. A lot of people watched it two or three times and took notes on it, which I was happy about. So I was aiming at.
But I mean, you cover, you know, you kind of tie in the government's involvement with drugs in this, from what I noticed, which is an angle that I don't see anybody else coming from.
True, and people have to understand that the relationship between organized crime and that's the mafia and government was very tightly around narcotics trafficking, very tightly woven. And that was necessary. It's the way the CIA launders money. Before that, the State Department was doing it. The CIA took it over. I mean, the CIA runs the war on drugs. It's a war of drugs in reality. And people have to see how important the opium trade was in Vietnam and also in Afghanistan. It's much more vital than the angle most people take on the war on drugs is private prisons and throwing minorities in jail, but it's a lot worse than that. I mean, they helped finance the Contras in Nicaragua, for example, who murder over 30,000 people. And currently ISIS gets money from illegal energy and drug trades. And so people have to see how it began in this tight relationship that was made after Watergate and something called the Safari Club. At first, I can't get into Kennedy, he's too much, it's a big can of worms, but post the Kennedy assassination, you had a tight alliance between the Israelis and the U.S. After Watergate, the CIA had to create an offshore CIA while it was being investigated, and that was the Safari Club. This is when they bring in Prince Turk from Saudi Arabia, Morocco, and France into the Israeli-American beltway. It's a sort of shared multinational intelligence agency, the CIA within the CIA, and these are the culprits behind 9/11. It went from James Jesus Angleton and Shatley over into the current counterintelligence wing of the CIA with Kofor Black and Richard Blee and George Tenet. And these are the architects of 9/11. I mean, they were caught. We have whistleblowers like Mark Rosilli, and I mean, there's so many actually, but saying that, listen, the CIA was well aware that Al-Mihar and Al-Hazmi, who were 9/11 hijackers, were living in California and going to flight schools and refused to tell the FBI. And the FBI's own special unit tracking bin Laden was told by the CIA to shut up when there were congressional investigations into it. They weren't allowed to share that information. But the CIA had been tracking them since they went to an Al-Qaeda summit meeting in Malaysia and had met Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, which we know from WikiLeaks cables. It's one of the good things that came out of that. Or no, that was from Bradley Manning directly, or Chelsea, whatever she wants to be called. If Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's the mastermind of 9/11. So they knew there were Al-Qaeda operatives living in the United States and going to flight schools and didn't tell the FBI and didn't act on it. Now, either they wanted it to happen or they knew it because they were making it happen. Either way, it's bad.
I guess that kind of runs into a point I never see covered that, you know, what do you think as far as, you know, how the planes got where? Do you think they let these people in and that they flew them, or how did this happen? Some people say they're remote controlled or whatever.
I think they flew them. I mean, you could have a safety behind that with remote control for the last 2 miles or whatever, but you still have to have hijackers to explain why they're being hijacked. And people were on the airphones making calls, and the bodies were still there, especially from the Pentagon in Flight 93. They had the DNA of every single victim except for the baby that was on Flight 77. So they were definitely on the planes. I think they flew them. It's not really that hard to hit a building on the ground floor. Like, the Pentagon would have been the easiest, because if you can land a plane on a runway, then you can, you know, take it further than the runway is supposed to go and hit the first floor of a building, which is exactly what it did. The World Trade Centers were a little bit harder because they were barely wider than a plane. And they hit them, but one of them hit the corner. It almost did miss, though. But, yeah, it would have been terrible to botch an operation. However, there was one plane that didn't find its target. So that Flight 93 is very mysterious, too, because the pilot on there is supposed to be this guy named Zaid al-Jarrah. This man, two of his first cousins, and I mean first cousins, not 33rd-degree cousins like Bush Kerry, like Alex Jones says. I mean his actual uncle's children were caught in Lebanon, spying on Hezbollah for the Israelis. So a 9/11 hijacker and pilot had first cousins in the Israeli espionage. Both of them work for the Mossad.
So I mean, you think that they really convinced these hijackers into this, you know, I don't know, Salafi type of Islam, and that they just had them carry it out, and maybe they put some types of explosives at the base of the building, or maybe
something was in the basement for sure. I don't think they convinced them. I think that Al-Qaeda is part of the CIA, has been since the Mujahideen was financed through them through BCCI, which was the bank that Prince Turki set up. Bandar Bush was running it at the time. BCCI was a bank in Pakistan that they had used to finance the Mujahideen. ISI as well, that's the Pakistan CIA. They were the ones laundering money through there and drug trade to pay these fighters, these Reagan's freedom fighters, to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. And it's from the Taliban or Mujahideen that you get the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, which were just the foreign fighters there. Foreign fighters in another country, just like ISIS. That's what they are, foreign fighters in another country. You know, mercs, mercenaries for intelligence agencies. They had been doing that. And when BCCI got shut down, they just started laundering money through Riggs Bank, which was the original bank that they used to push money through before BCCI existed. They only had that interloop when, you know, Carter went after them. So they moved it overseas. But Al-Qaeda came up with the plan. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed wanted to ram a plane into the Pentagon. But once the intelligence agencies got wind of this idea, they expanded it, made it a lot bigger, had more targets, and made sure that these guys got financed. And this is proven. I mean, the guys they knew who were living in California lived with a Saudi good agent. Omar Bayoumi financed these guys. Riggs Bank made the loan to his wife, Marguerite Duck Cook, who gave it to this guy named Osama Basnan, and directly into their bank accounts. They even bought an apartment for him and lived next to them. I mean, it can't get any more obvious. And for the financing in Florida, it was coming from this ecstasy trade drug ring by the Israelis that had been run out of South America into Florida. They were also living next door to them. And then, of course, you had the spies on the DEA, because you have to spy on the DEA if you're making money illegally selling narcotics, which is the infamous Israeli art students. And that has nothing to do with people on the 91st floor. I'm talking about real events that are documented, well-documented. The art students on the 91st floor weren't even Israeli. They're from Vienna, and they're real art students. They produce work and have for decades. That B thing had nothing to do with 9/11. It's all nonsense. But Hanan Sarfati was definitely a handler there. He was busted in Florida. He had moved over $100,000 they knew of in the month prior to 9/11. But of course, most damning thing is the infamous dancing Israelis who had lived both in Florida, only miles away from Mohammed Atta, and then moved to New York and lived near him in Brooklyn too. They moved whenever he moved. And these are the guys who were filming the first plane hitting. And this kind of thing is getting ignored.
I mean, just wow. I mean,
we got their names. We have a 1,800-page FBI document, six parts from the full field investigations in the 9/11, where they flat out say, I mean, one of these guys, Mamari, said in his interrogation that he came up to the roof of Urban Moving Systems. There were five different moving companies the Israelis were using for a front spy on these guys and handle them. And he said he went up to the roof. They called him up and said, hey, get your camera and come up here. They're about to take down the second building. I mean, damn, they're about to take down the second building. How do they know it's getting ready to fall? And then you look at the cell phones that were confiscated from the van from the guys that were driving around. And right there at 9:55, there were several calls made. It falls at 9:58, as if they were going around telling all their friends, hey, look at the tower now. It's getting ready to go down. But, I mean, it's more than that. I mean, they're busted red-handed filming the first plane hitting. They have traces of explosives in their van. Police found another van in World Trade Center 6 with explosive devices in it, same kind of van. Of course, there's the George Washington Bridge incident. I mean, it just goes on and on, but none of this is being dug up in 9/11 films. They don't want to talk about Israel, so, well, you can't. It's like talking about World War II without mentioning Nazis. It just cannot be done. You can't go further than the buildings look funny and fell down too fast if you're not going to talk about Israel or Saudi Arabia.
Well, there's kind of disinfo floating around about that too, because you'll see these photos floating around online with their van having picture of a plane crashing into the towers, and that can't be legit. Right, that's someone
That photo was faked, and the guy that made it was on my forum and admit that he faked it. I mean, obviously you can't have a photo of a van that blew up. And that's not even talking about the George Washington Bridge. That's talking about a van that was supposed to be on King Street between 6th and 7th, which doesn't exist. That's a myth. That was disinformation to try, and it was put out there by these white supremacists. So more than likely Zionists pretending to be white supremacists to give disinformation on this. I mean, there's no myth about it. It was dismissed by Bernard Carrick, who is the police commissioner in New York, tried to say that, okay, we pulled over these Israelis in their van, but there was no explosives, right? Bernard Carrick had been in Israel from August 26th to 29th, 2001, just weeks before 9/11, where he met Ertime Wertheimer, who's an Israeli billionaire, who gives him $250,000 in a loan. But he didn't do it directly. He went through this guy named Steve Witkoff, who's this mafia dealer in Brooklyn that has these scams on marble and imports or whatever, doesn't matter. But and then he gives it to Carrick's wife. So this is just like Omar Bayoumi moving money around, going through his wife to another guy's wife to the hijacker. You've got this Israeli billionaire giving it to a mobster who gives it to Carrick's wife, who gives it to a police commissioner. No conditions, by the way. Just, oh, here, have $250,000. He got another $500,000 from the Gambino family, Andy Hart, which he went to jail for, by the way, for fraud. So the police commissioner in New York went to jail. But, you know, of course, he's getting bribed by this Israeli billionaire. And so he did the whitewash. He's the guy who found a passport on 9/11, by the way, in New York. Same guy working for Giuliani, whose father was in the mob. I mean, it's endless, but this is a real kicker. Ertime Wertheimer, the same guy that gave him all the money. It's mentioned that they redacted a lot of it, but because of the redundancy in the reports, there were six different reports from the full field investigation from New Jersey, from New York, from Miami, and I'll tell you why Miami was involved in a minute. But they slipped up, and because Paul Kirsberg, one of these dancing Israelis, well, he's the brother of one, he was in the van, he said he was sent there by the Jewish agency to do blankety blank blank, it's all redacted. Well, guess who's on the board of governors for the Jewish agency? Ertime Wertheimer, same guy that's bribing the cops. So this is a lot deeper than just these guys acting on their own, like say they were the Mossad and they just knew it was going to happen, so they went and filmed it and messed up. No, they were directly involved because it's the Jewish agency, we're sending him there. And Paul's the oldest of the group, his brother's in the group, Sivan Kirsberg. Paul Kirsberg, Garin Shmuel, Omar Memori, and Omer Elner, Oded Elner. His testimony was all over the place too. All of them had different timelines about where they were and what they were doing on the morning of 9/11. They were lying. Every single one of them failed their polygraph test. Memori is the only one who eventually passed. He'd only been there a couple of weeks, and the only reason he was involved with the group was because Sivan recognized him because they had been in the Israeli army together. And so, I mean, he cried during the interrogation, and that guy, he was young and he was a mess. He didn't even know that the World Trade Centers had fallen due to supposedly fire until that night when he saw a television in jail. Because his partner, which is blanked out, but it was Dominic Suter, the boss, had said they're getting ready to take down the second tower. So he thought, oh, the authorities took the towers down so that they wouldn't topple over onto other buildings. That's what he believed the whole time until that night. And when he found out it was what it really was, he started talking to the cops. Now, Chertoff comes in and whitewashes this whole thing. We couldn't even read this report till 2011. We had to use a Freedom of Information Act to get it. And then most of it's redacted. But by comparing different newspapers that reported on it and the initial police report, and then the six different FFI reports, you can start to make this sort of Rosetta Stone and piece all the names together, which is what I did and put it all in the film. But yeah, just it's so much deeper than Building 7 fell too fast, or look at the squibs on the building. I mean, if you want to talk about the physics of 9/11, it's like, well, the whole subway was full of smoke, so that didn't happen from a hole, 100 stories above. The lobby's all blown out before the buildings fall down, so something definitely shook the entire premise because there are cameras filming the towers that shake a few seconds before it falls. And, you know, with it gutted above, a little shake's all it would take to get the top floors to fall into the bottom. And I'm not interested in getting into endless arguments about specifically what the explosives were made of. I would say shape charges. Thermite is unreliable as a timing mechanism. It could be C4. It could be a lot of stuff. Who cares about what type of bomb it was? You know, that's really irrelevant to me compared to who put it in there and how. And I documented how it was done and who was there, and that the five guys, six actually, that got arrested and thrown in jail, and two more that got indicted and thrown in jail recently for hiring them. We have their names. But, you know, it's like you got to tell people one-on-one, because if you Google 9/11, you're going to end up with some Jonestown nonsense. It's this huge dragnet of disinformation.
I don't think it matters what the charges were specifically, but I think it kind of discredits it for some to hear that people managed to put these all throughout the building without anybody noticing. And I don't think it was that extensive.
Yeah, you don't have to put them all throughout the building. All you have to do is put them on the base, which is, and you also have to disable the fire prevention systems, which they did and were caught doing. These guys, there was an arrest of a woman named Catherine Smith in Tennessee, who, because she had been giving out fake IDs, mostly to illegal immigrants, because Tennessee was a state where you didn't need a social security number to get a driver's license. And serendipitously, when they did their sting on her, she had been getting these licenses for five individuals who were run by this guy named Khalid Abdallah, who was a man from Jerusalem, who had given Catherine Smith her car. They had a tight relationship that he had built with this lady so that he could get IDs for his buddies. And when they were arrested, one of these guys had on his person and a pass to do work in the World Trade Center dated September 5th. And they asked him what he'd been doing there. And he said, well, we were working on the fire prevention systems. They said, for who? He said, Denco Mechanical, which there is a Denco Mechanical in Canada that has nothing to do with it. This is a guy named Sergey Denko, David Denko, who had a false business. He was arrested, and his partner, David Connell, who was also indicted, I have the indictment from the district attorney from New York, I have a copy of the whole thing, where they did not get master fire and plumbing license. They lied about their qualifications to get that. And then, of course, everyone they hired was based on deception, too. And on top of that, the World Trade Centers didn't outsource any work to on their fire prevention system. That was all done in-house. So the only way they could have been in there is if a tenant had asked them to come, and that tenant would have been Zim Shipping, which also moved out of the building and relocated in Norfolk, Virginia, which is half owned by the state of Israel. I mean, this is all documented. I took screenshots of the documents and the indictments and the names and the mugshots and everything. It's all in the film.
Well, I think it's much more important to go with things that we can document rather than speculation.
Well, by the way, yeah, I agree. By the way, Catherine Smith was murdered. A day before her trial, she was seen on fire in her car. They burned her so bad her arms fell off. But she still had traces of gasoline in her clothing. Now, it could be a suicide. She could have dumped gas on herself and decided while she's driving to set herself on fire. I highly doubt it. In the car that was given to her by the man from Jerusalem. But right before she was to testify, she died. I mean, not even going to court, no appeals or anything. And it was just for giving a fake license. It's not like she'd going to jail for the rest of her life or something. Who knows what the sentence would have been, but she mysteriously died. And Susan Nash of the FBI concluded that it was murder. But you know, that they gave these guys, they put them in jail and they set the bond as high as they could. But technically it was for receiving illegal licenses. They couldn't tie them to the murder since they were in jail when it happened. Someone else had to murder her. And they couldn't tie them to 9/11 because it was all circumstantial evidence that they had a pass to the trade centers and so on. They didn't figure out the rest of it until many years later.
But Ryan, I'm being told that we need to go to break right now. You're listening to The People Speak Radio. I'm your host, Michael Strasser, and we will be right back with our guest, Ryan Dawson.
You're listening to BBS Radio, If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
You are listening to The People Speak Radio. I am your host, Michael Strasser, and we're back with our guest, Ryan Dawson. We've got a caller on the line. Caller, can you please give us your first name, location, and your question or comment for our guest?
First, I would like to welcome you, Michael, to The People Speak. This is Sophia Ray. I'm calling in, you know, Ryan Dawson, because I want to know your opinions upon the UN relations with the Zionists in collaboration into the whole Israel conflict. If you look in the history of the United Nations, Israel has been in conflict ever since, and there has been no resolution. What is your insight on this matter between the UN sure. Zionists in the conflict?
Okay, well, that's a good question. The reason the UN has passed resolutions against Israel, but there would be hundreds more. The problem is on the UN Security Council is the United States, and they vote against it every single time, sometimes 141-1. The sole vote against resolutions condemning Israel's apartheid is from the United States. And that is because our Congress, as Pat Buchanan said, is Israeli occupied. In the very beginning, the UN did, after the Levant affair and Operation Susanna, Eisenhower did send in UN peacekeepers in 1957. They were to be there for 10 years.
Right. Obama is the head of the United Nations military. Now, what does that say for the United Nations, the history? What does that say for allowing China to move in on Africa, you know, it through diplomatic matters. So where's the peacekeeping with the United Nations?
Well, I think as Gaddafi said, since the UN was formed, you've had more conflicts than less. And of course, China is trying to move into Africa. Why wouldn't they? But they've been pretty much blocked successfully out of a lot of African nations. Africa suffers from neocolonialism, mainly from the Europeans rather than the U.S. You get giant commodity companies like Glencore from Mark Rich, who is an ardent Zionist himself, you know, stealing copper from Zambia, et cetera, and propping up these dictators like Paul Kagame in Rwanda, which they use to attack the Congo. Africa is almost every nation besides Egypt and South Africa is stuck in this neocolonial model. except for recent times with Nigeria. They have a new president who seems to be cracking down, but we'll see. But as far as the UN is a joke. I mean, the UN is the enforcement arm for NATO, really. I mean, they don't exist for peace. I mean, UN peacekeepers, it's a crock. It's better than the United States, but it's like, oh, do you want this bad guy or this really bad guy? It's the good cop, bad cop, but they're really both bad compared to actual peace. That's everywhere, all
and
these organizations.
You're inside about Obama and the head of military of the UN? What's
Obama's
that about,
a puppet.
Do you think?
Obama's nothing. I mean, they're exchangeable. Presidents are exchangeable. They do what they're told.
But the United Nations is the entire world.
It's not the entire world, but practically. And the UN Security Council is all that what really matters. I mean, it doesn't matter what they vote on when you have just a core group of countries that dictate whatever is going to pass. It's really Western hegemony, and that's what they enforce.
Well, dictation is the correct word. Now, they're dictating. Don't you get it? So why is this not the entire universe of the world? They run everything in other countries. They're uniting them through diplomatic matters.
Well, okay, they're definitely dictating what they do. They don't have sovereignty. I'm saying it's not the whole world participating in it. It's just a few countries dictating it. I see what you're saying as far as they're having control over the rest of the world, but it's not like they have a say in it or any representation. It's all up to the Security Council and anything that matters. And that's basically France, the UK, and the United States are the main three of those five.
Well, you have 5 to 7 permanent members. Everybody else is a temporary member, and they're voted in supposedly. Now,
right.
In the five or seven, whichever it is, they can veto over the majority. So how is that not ruling over the world of all the nations and taking over and stomping over?
It is. You were saying it is the whole world, not it rules over the whole world. I said, no, it's not the whole world. It's a linguistic thing.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. Have a good show.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much for your call. Ryan, we have a question from Steve from Australia. He asks, does Ryan still think a passenger plane hit the Pentagon? I think he knows the answer to that.
No, I know a passenger plane hit the Pentagon because pieces of it were still there. And there's a giant plane size hole and plenty of witnesses and DNA testing from all the victims. This missile hit the Pentagon BS is this. It's an atrocious. It leads to nowhere. You have to explain where the plane went, because everyone saw it fly to the Pentagon. Nobody saw it fly away from the Pentagon. You have to explain why there's a 90-foot hole in the first floor with plane engines and pieces of the Boeing 757. You have to explain where the DNA matches the passengers that were on the flight. You have to explain the calls that were made from the flight. I mean, 100% of the evidence matches the passenger plane, and there's zero evidence and zero witnesses of a missile or a bomb.
Oh.
It was a plane.
Oh, okay. I'm seeing people here in text. I'd like to clarify, and Ryan's covered this on a number of videos, that when you're showed the size of this hole on documentaries like Loose Change, they've got like the water spraying on the bottom of the hole, and then they superimpose a plane on top of that and say, well, how in the world is this plane supposed to fit in the hole? But, you know.
Right. Of course it couldn't. A plane doesn't fit. There's no way a plane can fit in an 18-foot hole, period. But that's only the hole in the second floor. They didn't show you one picture of the first floor. And then you got all these architects and engineers. They go, well, so-and-so and so-and-so says this. I'm like, yes, because the preliminary information they were given was false. So you don't need to be an engineer even to say, well, a plane doesn't fit in a tiny hole. No, duh. But it wasn't a tiny hole. So given the correct information where it's this huge hole or the exit ring, you know, that's, of course, the fuselage went through there because the landing gear punched through the C-ring because they didn't put the wheels down because he wasn't interested in landing the plane. He was trying to hit the building, which is what he did.
Right.
The whole thing was still there. They did not show
you
a single photo of the first floor. And that's on purpose. That is intentional. You don't just accidentally screw up that bad where every single photo you show intentionally has water or trucks or something parked in the way so you can only see the hole in the second floor. That loose change was Israeli financed. It is pure disinformation. They finally did retract their crap on the Pentagon, but not to the degree that they promoted it.
I almost didn't take, I mean, and I'm being serious here, I almost didn't take 9/11 seriously because I was watching all these videos about, okay, well, if a plane went through, this light post gets knocked down, this light post gets knocked down, here are these light posts,
I mean,
there's
even
traffic
have to
going
touch
by.
Light bulb. You don't even
there's
have
traffic
to
going by the whole
down.
Time, and there's no way that they just sent people out there to knock the light post down. That's
I know.
So stupid.
And what do they go and get burnt engines and throw them inside the building just to make it look like a plane hit? What's the motive? Why
How
not?
Are they gonna do this
I mean,
with all the
hit,
traffic going
hit
by?
New York with planes. Why wouldn't you hit Virginia with a plane? What's the point? I mean, if you're going to think, of course, there are people who think there weren't planes in New York either. They think it's all holograms and stuff. But definitely, you can definitely see the second plane from multiple angles. I mean, you would have to Photoshop every single ounce of smoke from every angle and make it match. I mean, they hit the South Tower on every news channel showing an airplane run into the building. All those people are dead, by the way, because everybody on the plane, you'd have to get them to go along with it, or you'd have to go around and murder them all. You'd have to fake all their voices. I mean, it's so stupid. And that's the kind of stuff that gets people to scoff at 9/11 and go, oh, that's kooky conspiracy stuff. I'm giving them documented evidence with real names of people, and you have people thinking, well, I don't think a plane. It's
and the no scratch on the lawn thing when there's plenty of scrapes on the lawn. You can see
oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, the lawn is not even adjacent to the building. The parking lot is. And the parking lot was completely screwed up. And so was the lawn. The lawn didn't even touch the building. I mean, obviously the parking lot comes and then the lawn. It's not like you park your car, walk across the lawn, and then go into the building. And the rings is the other stupid thing. So the rings are on the top floors. The bottom floor isn't ringed. There's only two rings. So it went through the wall and it went through the C-ring, which would only be the second wall. And only a little bit of it did. It was just the landing gear. And there's broken landing gear in front of the hole. So that's obviously what happened. These giant towers, tires, which are attached to steel, which went through. And the engines went through far. The rest of the plane didn't make it so far, but the fire did. And then you have the top floor collapse onto the bottom. Huge swap collapsing over the giant hole. It didn't collapse over a tunnel. It collapsed over a big hole because an airplane ran into it. I feel like
everyone.
I just wasted a whole bunch of breath. Like, if you're so stupid that you still think a missile hit the Pentagon, like, whatever. I mean, okay, space race, go for it, aliens, whatever. I mean, why have evidence? You know, why prove it? There's no evidence of a missile, and all the evidence matches an airplane.
I've seen all the wreckage. Everyone, I'm your host, Michael Hutchinson. And we're on the air with Ryan Dawson here. If you want to call in, please call 1-888-429-5471 with your questions. And Ryan will be happy to take them. He might call you out if he thinks you're wrong, but I think you should be okay with that. But all the wreckage is there. You could see the landing gear. You could see the exit hole that you would expect toward the other side. And when I looked at all that, I thought there was no way. And I hate to say, well, I know somebody who worked
EMTs,
for some type of intelligence.
Everyone working there, there's no way you got everybody in on it. Faked pictures of plane parts and stuff and faked witnesses. How about a plane at the building, problem solved? There's no reason to reject a plane. Like, the only reason was they thought the hole was too small, and they were lied to about that by Jonestown. Once you know there's a larger hole, what's the problem? Missile didn't make a plane-sized hole shaped like a cone that leaves pieces of plane behind. Ugh. And they know they use planes in New York. What is the point of a switcheroo? What is the motive, and where is the evidence? You get crickets with that.
No, I mean, it mostly centers around, you've got this really shitty footage, and you can't really see what's going by. And, you know, well, they confiscated all the other footage.
Okay, there's another myth. The 84 cameras crap. when you look at that request, that was 84 cameras that they got in the whole of 9/11, 50 some of them, which were in New York. There are only 5 cameras, and only 2 actually show the plane approaching the building. And that's where you get the crappy 5-frame stuff from. And the reason is those surveillance cameras weren't designed to catch things going 300, 400 miles an hour. They're designed to catch people walking, maybe a car going 30 miles an hour. So when something zips by going 400 miles an hour, it's just going to be a little blur because the security cameras weren't anticipating a fucking airplane going into the building. They're there to catch people going into the building who are walking, maybe running. So that's what it would look like on any security. It's not, they didn't have some high tech, you know, super slow-mo camera there just in case somebody flew an airplane in the building.
Well, you talked about
the airplane hits the building because it goes right over, you know, I-395 and 495 in Washington, D.C., full of cars in the morning. You know, hundreds and hundreds of witnesses seen a plane go over. I mean, you can't fake all of that.
Those planes are loud as hell.
Out in the woods somewhere. It's in the middle of D.C.
Those planes are loud as hell. I mean, everybody would hear them.
Everybody did, and they saw it. Like, nobody questions that except for loose change kooks. Even Alex backed away from it. He's like, "Oh, I don't want to talk about the Pentagon. Building 7 is the blah, blah, blah." He doesn't want to clearly tell people that no, a missile didn't hit the Pentagon because he'd lose half his audience. And he's not about telling the truth. He's about numbers because Alex likes his shekels. That is the only thing he's concerned with.
What do you think about Building 7, by the way?
Well, it had another building fall on top of it, and they allowed it to burn for 8 hours straight, so of course it fell down. Now, asymmetric fires should not make a symmetrical collapse, which is true. So that's very suspicious. But saying that there were only pockets of fire is not true. And showing pictures from the north side of the building at 9 in the morning when the fire was small doesn't help your case, because by 5:20, the whole southwest corner was gone. The whole southern side of the building was completely on fire. And so if you do not show that, if you are dishonest about that, then people are going to reject Building 7 too and say, "Oh, well, you said there were only pockets of fire, and that wasn't true. I saw these raging fires on the other side." Now, that doesn't mean that fire took it down, but it does mean if you exaggerate the claims and they get debunked, then you're losing credibility, which is what Jonestown did. As far as announcing that it fell before it fell, that did happen on BBC and Fox, and I don't remember if it was CNN or ABC, but there was another network that reported that it had fallen while it was still there. One reported it had fallen, and then later on in the broadcast, it falls, and it kind of mystified. There was also a report at 10:45 in the morning where they said, you know, vaguely, firemen said, that a 50-story building had fallen down. You have to understand this whole area is covered in smoke. It's right next to, or, you know, ash and stuff. They said a 50-story building had gone down. Now, that is the exact time that Flight 93 would have reached New York had it not gone down in Pennsylvania. I did the math on that. And so they were floating a story that Building 7 fell that morning. Then they screwed up again and said it fell around 5 o'clock, and it didn't actually fall until 5:19, 5:20. So, but I mean, they expected it to fall because they weren't fighting the fire. Unlike other fires of skyscrapers where the fire department put hoses on it, they didn't do that. So if you allow a building to burn, it will fall down.
That building looked pretty damaged to me when I was looking at some of the angles on it.
Oh yeah, it was. I mean, one corner was missing. I'm surprised it stayed up at all. It just seems like it should have fallen toward the more damaged side, and yet it fell almost straight down. It did fall toward the south, but not timber style. It kind of broke in the middle. But, you know, fire is fire. I don't think they need to go in with explosives and rig Building 7, though. All you have to do is let it burn, which is what they did. It burned for 8 hours. It was guaranteed to eventually go down.
So you think that they might have, like, put charges in it to make it fall symmetrically like it did, but, I mean...
You could have time, because on the north side, to say, well, we want to make sure it all goes. But, I mean, I don't see the point in speculating on that. Like, who cares? You already have them red-handed. breaking the fire prevention systems in the World Trade Centers, filming the first plane hitting, all these lies about the hijackers and how the money was moved around. I mean, it's obvious, but yeah, you don't have to, I don't think that whoever, you know, went into the World Trade Center 7 and rigged up explosives while it was on fire, they would have had to have done it beforehand in the case that, you know, the plane didn't arrive, which it didn't, or the fire didn't spread the way they wanted. You could have had accelerants in there too, so once the fire reached that point, it got bigger. There's lots of scenarios, but they definitely wanted that building down. I mean, it had the Security Exchange Commission in there, CIA offices. A lot of the money that the Pentagon was missing was being physically traced by the section of the Pentagon that was taken out, and the backup was Building 7, and both were physically destroyed on 9/11.
What about the people that mentioned, well, Larry Silverstein said pull it, you know?
Pull it means pull out and stop fighting the fire, which is what they did.
I think there's too much emphasis thrown on that, and they say, well, it's a demolition term, and then they'll also use terms like they'll talk about the towers, and
you'll see it cut and take a cable and wreck the building on purpose. Like, there weren't any cables on Building 7. They just pulled out and watched it burn from 9:30 in the morning until 5:20. It's exactly what he said it was. He said, I thought there's already too much loss of life. This is the whole sentence, by the way, but the whole context. There's already too much loss of life. We decided the safest thing would be to just pull it. You know, they pull out and watch it burn.
And you would think it would collapse immediately if demolish it is what it meant.
Right. If he said pull it, then they would have done it right away. But they didn't. They quarantined it. It's basically what they did. They said, leave it alone. We're not going to fight this fire. We don't want any more, you know, risk anyone else getting killed, because a lot of firemen had already died in the World Trade Centers as it was. So they let it burn.
And the whole thing about, well, the beams are cut at angles. Well, they cut them to rescue people. So I think that's a bad point, too.
Yeah, they show you pictures where they cut the beams after the fact. I mean, like, of course they cut the beams. They didn't want them falling down, and they were doing it for a rescue. So, yeah, it's 45-degree cuts. That, you know, they're not going to have that kind of shape charges like that. I mean, see, all this physics of the building, like, Richard Gage endorsed my work as far as who did it and how they did it and all that. I don't like getting into the physics of the building stuff because there's so much disinformation. And even when you explain it to people, they won't accept it anyway. There's the church of, you know, 9/11 that just was like obsessed with the physical collapse of the buildings and nothing else. And most information they have in the buildings is wrong. Like saying jet fuel is not hot enough to burn or melt steel. One, the claim is not that the steel melted. It's just that it was weak enough to drop its load. And then if you find molten metal, which you don't know if it's steel or not later, that doesn't matter, because that's when, you know, the whole thing collapsed into the parking garages and stuff below. You have a cauldron of fire burning there for days. So yeah, then it's going to melt things. But
well, Ryan, we've got to call this a wrap. I mean, there have been tons of people in text saying disinfo, but I ask them to look at the evidence instead of just making wild claims.
That's what it is. They're the kooks. Like the jet fuel thing, it's not just jet fuel, you fucking idiots. It's a building on fire. Indoor fires exceed 1,800 degrees without any kerosene at all. Just
a regular
house fire exceeds the temperature.
Our time is up. I've been told time. You've been listening to the People Speak radio show with Michael Strasser. I'd really like to thank Ryan Dawson for coming on and remind you that his website is risetosense.com, RYS2SENSE.com. Definitely watch The Empire Unmasked and War by Deception. And what were your two books called?
The Separation of Business and State and Welcome to the USSA, kind of a play off the USSR. I have another site called ancreport.com. That's the anti-neocon report.
Thank you all for listening and participating. Good night, everyone.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood there hungry.